I'm David Mattson, and this is Primetime 89. A chance for me to visit and talk story, check in and catch up with classmates from a generation ago, finding out how they're doing, where they are, how they got there, and what experiences they've had along the way. We were having so much fun, we forgot to start recording. Okay, that's anyway, okay. Where do you live?
Mililani Maka.
Mililani Maka, oh, good, because you're
yeah,
like-
Yeah, Mililani is all like planned development, right? So yeah. I live in one of those cookie cutter developments, yeah.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, I like it. We're 18 years up here.
For some reason, I thought you lived in like a Leva area. No, not in town.
Oh, that's my parents. That's my parents. Mm-hmm. Oh,
that's where you grew up?
Yep.
Okay.
It's technically Kalihi. They're on the cusp of Kalihi. I could never legally say that I was raised in Aleva Heights. Because you know what I mean? You have Aleva Heights and then you have Kalihi. And I'm like, on the border, so we have a Kalihi zip code. You know, when I go back to my mom's house, like, it's so noisy. Town is just so noisy compared to out here. I hate the driving. It's just too much traffic everywhere. I have no patience for that anymore. I could not go back and live in town.
Did you have any siblings? You know, what were family get-togethers like and stuff?
I have one brother. He's a 86 grad.
From Kamuna.
Yeah. Family's huge. My dad is from Maui. My dad is the oldest of 11 kids. So you can imagine how many cousins I have.
He's the oldest of 11 kids, huh? So you must have really young cousins.
Yeah, I have a first cousin who is my son's age. So my dad's family is all like that. Like, my grandma had him young, and she was the first one to have kids because she was the oldest. Mm-hmm. So my dad's first cousins are all my age, you know, and then on. So I have, like, 30-something first cousins just on my dad's side. And then my mom's side, she's the oldest of five. Not as many cousins, but we grew up with them. So weekends was either my mom's side or my dad's side. You know, we were always with cousins. Every summer I spent on Maui from the day school finished to the day school started. I was in Maui with my grandma and my cousins. Yeah.
Wow. What part of Maui do they live?
West Kahana. All the way west. So past Lahaina, past Ka'anapali. Mm-hmm. It's the west coast of Maui.
So what was it like there?
We would literally get up in the morning. Grandma would feed us breakfast. Then she would go on and do her chores, you know. And we would either go walk to the beach, go swimming, fishing. Like, that was our life. Mm-hmm. Grandma had lunch ready for us. And then we would go back out and just go to the beach every day. Sundays, we would have to go to church. In the summer times, I was purple. Like, pretty much purple. You don't think I can turn purple, but the Filipino.
No, I don't believe. Purple. Oh. Relita, that's Filipino.
Yeah, yeah. So my dad is Hawaiian Chinese Filipino, and my mom is Japanese Korean.
I can see the Japanese Korean side, but the Hawaiian and the Filipino, that's okay. It manifests when you go to the beach then, and the color comes out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I was purple. I'm mysterious. Like, you could only see my teeth. Kind of. Well, I know. And sadly, like, I don't have pictures when I was young.
I was gonna ask, you know, photographic evidence of that, because I can't imagine. I can't picture that.
But it was like kind of real wavy and thick and past my okole. Yeah, my cousin always says, you know, when I was little, all you would see is this skinny little body and hair. Like, who's that cousin? Is that cousin it? The one that has all the hair? That's what she said I look like, because that's what I was. That was my childhood, every summer on Maui. Yeah.
Sounds precious.
Very, very.
What year did you start at Kumamea?
Seventh grade. So I came from the Priory, straight A student, really good student at St. Andrews. So my brother had already gotten in. He's an 86 grad, right? So he got in seventh grade. Mm-hmm. So my parents said, we're going to test you again. And I'm like, nope. I don't want to go. You know, back then, you know, it's like, I want to stay with all my friends. Mm-hmm. And they were all my girlfriends, you know, and I said, no, I'm not going to, if you make me take the test, I'm not going to do well. And I remember taking the test. I didn't not try to do well. Like, I tried to do well. Mm-hmm. I remember the interview. Like, I remember all of these parts of it, you know, like they asked if you could go anywhere in the world, where would you go? And I came up with like Australia, because I want to see the koalas, you know, I remember all that. So fast forward to the acceptance day, and it's Ho'olauleia Day. Never forget it. We went to Ho'olauleia, me and my mom, came home, and she's like, oh, the big envelope. We got the big envelope. The big envelope is in the box. And I was like, not having it. I kept telling them, nope, I'm not going. And they tried everything in the book. They tried to tell me, but we might not be able to afford the Priory after a while. All of these things, you know, and the heavy things were not a factor to me. Nope, not anymore. Until they said, you know, we have to buy you clothes because there's no uniform. Okay, I'm in. I'm going. Because I was so superficial at that point, and I didn't realize it. And so that's what tipped me over. Never looked back. And so I'm so thankful for that, you know, because now, you know, raising my own family, I realized what it took for them to pay a private school tuition. My mom was a secretary and my dad was a bus driver. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking back, it's like, wow, I was so caught up in clothes, in money, in house, you know, what kind of house we have. And I was the poor girl amongst all those other girls. So coming to Kamehameha, well, I realized like there's people worse off. And sure. So that was eye-opening.
For some reason, I thought you lived in like a Lewa area. No, not in town.
Oh, that's my parents. That's my parents'.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's where you grew up?
Yep.
Where's your
parents' house? So you know where the Makanani gate is at the elementary?
Yes.
Like it's out that street.
How did it feel living so close to the school?
I could sleep the latest. Ooh. You know? I was sleeping till 10 or whatever time we started school, and everybody else is like on the bus ride, sleeping on the bus. No, I was stoked that I live so close. Oh my God. I used to catch the terminal bus.
Yeah.
And then catch the city bus with Erin Kahaolopua. So I would come all the way down to catch the bus back up.
And how close did the bus drop you off to your house?
Right around the corner. Yeah. Okay.
Are there any things that you've kept, like souvenirs or whatnot from Kamehameha?
Besides all my yearbooks, I actually have our junior prom glass.
Okay.
She still has my song contest feather lei, which is all like, if I were to touch it, I think it would poof, you know. She has, see, oh, yours is in good shape.
Yeah, I never touched it since I started this project. I just stuck it in the box and it was there for like 30 years. So
I made my own.
Oh, you made your own?
Yeah. Every year we celebrate song contest. We view a song contest and we wear our lei. Mm-hmm. So I made myself a lei.
Was there any particular experience that you had at Kamehameha that, you know, really made a difference in how you saw things, you know?
If I look back, and people always ask, you know, like what you got out of it, what I really got out of it was friends. Oh, friends. Like, that's the biggest thing, you know, is the connections that I made. And yeah, the education was wonderful. You know, I got, mm-hmm. I learned a lot. I learned things that the average person didn't learn, mm-hmm. you know, in a public school or in any other school. One of my favorite teachers is Mrs. Ortiz. Do you remember her? She did like the class was home economics, but we didn't call it that. We called it something else. Mrs. Ortiz stood out. She was just kind of motherly and very kind, you know, and I remember that about her.
So how do you think people who knew you back in high school would remember you?
I feel like they would think I was quiet and innocent. I don't know. I'd like to think that that's how people remember me.
Really, Kara? You think so?
Yeah, I do. I do think so. I don't feel like I was as loud as I am now. I don't think so. So then that equates to I was quiet in high school. You know, that's the thing. I feel like I had my core group of friends. I wasn't like cliquey or anything like that.
So who was your core in high school? Who did you really spend a lot of time with?
Have you ever heard the term twinterellas?
No, please enlighten.
Oh my gosh. There was that one story we always had to read in like Hawaiian history. And so when we looked at our core group of friends, we had one of each like primary ethnicity. So it was Jennifer Trinidad, who was our Bonifacio. I was the Toshio, the Japanese. Kalei was like the Paula because she was the Hale one. Aideen was the Portugal. Back then it was the band girls, basically. So Michelle De Lima, Suzanne, Ho'ohuli, Jen, Kalei, Aideen. That was pretty much the group. And then it kind of extended to like Ulu, Kego. I hung out with Moya and Tasha and Melissa a lot. So I had a kind of a big core group because we were all in band together. Okay. Out of high school, we're still what we refer to ourselves as twinties, like legit. We still call each other that.
So what's the primary origin of the word tunta?
Tunta is kind of like, I don't know. What would you think?
I don't know. Bunch of potatoes.
Huh? Like tira, yeah. Like Portuguese style tira. Here's another question you didn't ask me. I'm over here doing the interview. I thought about it because I heard everybody else's ones, right? Okay. And I want to sit down and have lunch with Beth because even though we were friends,
yeah,
Beth was actually the very first person that I knew coming into Kamehameha. Our families knew each other. I would love to see if she did everything that she wanted to, because I know she wanted to stay with us for her son's graduation, because we're getting to that age where, yeah, we're losing friends, we ourselves are fighting ailments. I want to learn from that and know what I can do to prepare for my last years, you know, and I don't want to skip a beat. Like, I don't want to miss any of it. Losing her at such a young age, I don't want to be that person to run out of time. Mm-hmm. But that's who I would want to hang out with again.
When you were in high school, was there anything about what you were interested in or what you were doing that led to what you're doing now?
So you remember how we used to have like career days and like you could get out of class, you would go to the person who's speaking. I went to the teacher and I went to the nurse. Mm-hmm. And so my every intention after high school is to become a preschool teacher. So I went to Chaminade straight after school to join their early education program. Mm-hmm. And then I got pregnant the second semester. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was going to be a single mom. And I said, oh, how am I going to support my child on a preschool teacher's salary. It's hard. So I finished my year at Chaminade, and then I took a semester off because Kainoa was born in September. Mm-hmm. And then in January, I decided, what can I do with kids? So I was like, oh, nursing. And then that's going to pay me well. Cool. So like, I'll just go to nursing school with every intention of being a pediatric nurse. And luckily, I was blessed with becoming a pediatric nurse. So I ended up getting that degree.
So where did you get your degree from?
I actually only have an associate's degree. While I was at UH Manoa, I realized like, oh, I have enough credits to get into the program at KCC. Mm-hmm. So I applied, didn't get in. In the meantime, I called the nurse recruiter almost every day just to kind of touch base, get my name out there. Hey, she's got determination, you know? And I always told them like, no, it's really important to me to get into school because I got to raise my kid. I got to raise my kid. Like 3 days before the fall semester started, oh, and someone dropped out. They actually called me with a position. I had to put my kid in school. I had to potty train him first. I had to find a school. I had to go buy all my uniforms, books, everything, you know, had to quit my job at Long's. Like it was all in a matter of less than a week and it all fell into place. I was very blessed.
Wait a minute. You potty trained a child in less than a week?
Yeah, when he wouldn't do it for like 2 years.
And he never underestimated. Never underestimate the determination of a single mom.
Macro. Or a kid who's like threatened to go.
you copped your mom voice, I bet.
Like, okay. So I threw him in the tub one night and I told him, just go shishi in that hole over there. And so he did. And then he didn't like that it splashed on his feet. And that was it. He went in the potty after that.
Oh.
So then he got into school and I went to school and like the rest was history. KCC gave me the quickest RN degree, right? Yeah. So I was so thankful for that. I got scholarships from Alulike, Kamehameha schools. I was so blessed. So I pretty much went to school for free and they put Kainoa in preschool also for free.
Oh, wow.
So I just, everything fell into place.
So what do you do for a living?
I'm a pediatric oncology nurse. I work at Tripler.
Pediatric oncology. That must be tough.
Everybody says that, but really it's not hard. The hardest part is actually dealing with the parents because the parents have their own issues is what I'm saying. And the kids just come in, they get poked, they get their chemo, and then they move on. You know, it's just a part of the day. Coming to the hospital is not what every kid does. So the most challenging part is the parents. When a child gets diagnosed, they don't have the why me, what did I do wrong, what's going to happen if I die, you know, all those, they think about the future, right? Adults and kids are just kind of like, yeah, my future is today, getting out of the hospital today. They figure this is what it is. I'm not going to spend all my energy fighting. I'm just going to get it done. And then I can go home, you know? So that's the beautiful part of pediatrics is they don't come with baggage. They just, everything is about getting to the next step. There's something so sweet and innocent about that.
Yeah, I agree. When I was doing pediatric oncology, that was the toughest because it was really the parents who had the emotional challenges going through all of that because they knew, you know, high school graduation is normally a part of life, meeting someone special, having kids yourself, all those milestones that their kids may never, some probably will never experience. And it weighs on them.
I think that if I had to describe kids going through cancer, it's just resilient. Mm-hmm. And I tell parents all the time, like, they want to be strong. I have to be strong for my kid. I have to be strong for my kid. No, actually, I tell every one of them, you're going to be surprised at how much you feed. Your child will feed you the strength. You're going to learn from the kid that you can be strong. And they're like, no, I'm the one who has to be strong. But it's the opposite in my experience. That's why it's not hard for me. Everyone learns from it. The parents learn. I learn from every single one that does well or bad. There's always some lesson to be learned, every single patient.
Yeah, yeah.
As that nurse, I always take something from it.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been in pediatric oncology?
26 years, on and off, yeah.
26?
Yeah, it was my first job as an RN. I knew I wanted to work with kids, but never did I think I was going to work in oncology. So the job fell into my lap and I never escaped it. Everywhere I went to work, it followed me. I tried to leave it when I was at Kapi'olani. Mm-hmm. I had a really hard time because my kids were the same age as the kids that we were dying, you know, and I was bringing it home. I didn't know how to like separate it at the time. I was too young. I was too new as a nurse. Mm-hmm. I left Kapi'olani, went to a private doctor's office for a year. I got a job at Kaiser and I go to Tripler pediatric clinic again. This is even better. Like they have to have a huge population of kids getting their well baby and their school physicals. I can totally do this. I'm actually an advisor.
What year was this? What year did you start at Tripler?
2009.
Okay.
So lo and behold, they have oncology too. And I'm like, okay, I surrender. I surrender to it. It's God telling me that this is what I got to do. Mm. Yeah. So it's been a long time.
Is there something that you encountered over these 20 some years in pediatric oncology that, you know, you really remember?
I do remember taking care of this one 21-year-old. He had a lymphoma and he was terminal and he died alone. And mom was single. She was a single mom. So she had to take care of her other kids. Mm-hmm. And he didn't have friends. He didn't have family. He didn't have a future. He sadly had nothing. And that's how he passed. And he passed angry. But those experiences are so rare, right? Because as you know, families pull together. You get support one way or another most of the time, right?
Sure.
So there's more rewarding, positive experiences, even if the kids pass, than bad ones like that. Those are really rare.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of really life-affirming things that we come across, you know. Guys who know that they're going to die, they tell me I'm going to die. So thank you so much for everything you've done for me. Like, what are you talking about? I'll see you tomorrow.
Let me tell you, kids do that too.
Really?
Yeah, kids do that. I had a boy, 12-year-old, getting a bone marrow transplant, and we are infusing his marrow. And he tells me, Auntie, not going to work. And I said, you can't talk like that, you know? And he said, but I know, I can feel it. It's not going to work, but don't tell my mom. Kids, they, when they can express themselves, their biggest fear is leaving their parents. Not because the kid is going to leave. They know they're going to be okay. They're afraid that the parent's going to be alone. And they worry about the parents' feelings more than theirs. So yeah, it's amazing. They know. I had a 2-year-old that looked at me and she looked behind me. And she's like, hi, Grandma.
Oh.
And I said, oh, do you see Grandma? And she said, yeah. Yeah, Grandma, Grandma. So I said, hey, Grandma. And then she passed a few days later. It gives me peace to know that they're going, you know, that somebody's waiting for them.
Yeah.
That little, you know, that little boy that the transplant, he was being raised by his grandparents because the mom was off getting into trouble and stuff. So when he got diagnosed, it was such a beautiful thing because the mom actually came back. And the mom came back and took responsibility and she took really good care of him all through his treatment. So he's with me for years. He's in the bone marrow transplant stage. And you know, everything's all sterile and everything. Mm-hmm. So I go in his room one night and it's just he and I hear a cat meow And I go, what is that? He goes, nothing, nothing. And he's trying to like shimmy all his sheets around. And I'm like, what is that noise? Oh, we're gonna get in trouble, yeah. And I said, why? He busts out a kitten. A kitten.
In the bone marrow transplant, yeah.
A mom smuggled in a cat. And I was like, oh, you know I gotta say something, right? And he goes, I know, we're gonna get in trouble. Because he was actually having problems at the time. He's having fevers and stuff.
Oh.
But anyway, this kid was such an animal lover. So he goes on, he passes away at home. Mm-hmm. So he had always told me that when he gets out and he's getting, and he's all better, like when he gets to go home, his mom is going to get him a dog. So never happened, right? Because he ended up passing away. But they were taking his body out in the driveway. This is a little white chihuahua comes walking across the driveway, comes up the driveway. So the grandpa picks it up and he's like, whatever, I'm going to have to find the owner, right? Days go by, weeks go by. This grandpa is like holding on to this dog. Finally, the neighbor says, oh, I know whose dog that is. That's so-and-so down the street, but I don't think she lives here anymore. So he takes the dog back to the house that the dog belongs, and it's the girl's father. The girl's father says, yeah, that's my daughter's dog. She'll take care of him. And I'm not, you know, the dog is like roaming the streets half the time. If you keep him, you can keep him. So the grandpa was like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, I don't like the dog. So he goes, what is the dog's name? And he said, my kid's name. So that's like chicken skin story, but that's the truth. So there were so many blessings that came with that.
Of course, yeah.
It's real sweet. I have a million stories like that, but that one sticks out the most.
What would your dream job be?
1,000% ice cream taster.
Yeah, but you gotta only taste the Häagen-Dazs green tea though. You would have to go to other flavors and other varieties.
Yeah. I can work for Häagen-Dazs then and be their quality control.
Because she's lactose intolerant.
What? Wait, what? You are not lactose intolerant.
I am. I suffer from my ice cream.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so that's how much you love it.
But this is a funny question because I ask this question as icebreakers, right? To like mm-hmm. different people, if there's like interviews or anything like that.
Yeah.
I'll ask them if money was not a factor. But you have to have a job because you have to earn a living somehow. Like you have to get and do something every day. What would you do? So mm-hmm. again, 1,000% ice cream taster. But my secondary job would be Cinderella in the electrical parade at Disneyland. Even though they would probably cast me as Mulan, I would rather be Cinderella.
Would you bleach your hair blonde for that privilege?
Yeah, totally. And I would wear like blue contacts. I always wanted to ride in the electrical parade. Like, and Cinderella has that carriage. So I want to ride in the glass.
The pumpkin carriage. Yeah. I can see you as Cinderella. I can see that. Yeah.
Don't lie. You know, you see me as Mulan.
You would be an awesome Mulan. Yes, Kara. You may be Cinderella in the electrical parade at Disney.
You're gonna understand our class.
That's the big thing, one. The understanding of
how close we are.
Not even that, just our minds are very at the whole class. I mean, even though like the people you don't know, you don't know, there's this mind connection of similar thought waves.
Yeah.
Oh. So when outsider people come in, it's like oh. You okay? You see everything all right? Look like it's not all right, but it's all right.
Yeah.
We always say it's an unspoken connection, right? We've kept since high school, and I can only imagine what it feels like on the outside. You know, what looking in, like how can it be? Like I'm not that close to all my classmates. Like, that's ridiculous. You know, And it is kind of ridiculous. And we're lucky in that way. It's just a different
yeah. thing. It's completely ridiculous, but we're all ridiculous together. So it's yep. okay.
Yeah. You didn't have to know that person. You know, and that's what we take out of the reunions. Our class is so close and we have get-togethers.
Yeah.
It's automatically. We don't feel funny about bringing our other half because you are the other half. You belong to the class, you know?
Do you guys remember how you both met?
I knew of him. Mm-hmm. I don't know if he knew of me.
No, he knew of me. I knew of you.
So I said, let's go get out the yearbook and see if you signed my yearbook. And he did. In eighth grade, he said something to the effect of, I can only write a few lines. And he drew 3 squiggly lines. And then he's like, you know, the typical, like, have one good summer. Catch you later or whatever. And then it says, Chuchin. And we're like, what the hell is Chuchin? We still don't know.
I don't know.
That's how he signed it. It didn't say Kaneala. I don't remember him being my friend, but he signed my yearbook.
Like when you met and you first started going out.
Yes.
So go back to the 15-year reunion. It was at Dako's Aloha Tower. So the end of the night comes and I'm standing by the bar with a bunch of us girls. Mm-hmm. And he comes up and he's saying bye to everybody. Okay, bye. You know? And then he comes up to me, Dave, and he like kisses me, like full on kisses me, everything. And I'm like, whoa, like where the hell did that come? I didn't talk to him the whole night. So I'm thinking that's what he's all about. And he must have been like, oh, I never really noticed that before. So anyway, he plants one on me.
Yeah.
And then I go, where are you going? And he's like, oh, I have another party to go to. Like, so I gotta go. Fast forward.
That story that she just said, I do not remember doing that at all. To this day, I try to dig deep and I do not remember that at all. But it sounds like something I would do. And I feel like, oh, I would do that. So it's like, I guess it must be true.
And he did have a party.
Her recollection of everything is correct, but I do not remember this kiss thing. And then went to the 25th reunion and we were just hanging out. Everybody doing that thing. Nobody know that we was, hanging out like that. They're just friends. And then we went to the first get to get to your question the longest way I can.
Yeah.
We was like, hey, we go watch one football game in San Fran. We go on a trip. She's like, shoot. So we went to San Fran. Who was?
San Fran, Washington.
Redskins. Okay, we go Napa. We go watch some football game. And so we did. That was the whole wine thing and football game.
Yeah. So football is one of the things that kind of drew us together too, because. The year that we were first starting to talk to each other was the Broncos in Seattle in the Super Bowl. So we were bantering a lot about that. We have a lot of fun together. We really have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And that's really how it is. And so, if you were to ask us, like, when is our first date? When is our anniversary? When is our first kiss? Because some of us don't remember the first kiss. We don't have specific.
But I go with November 2014, that first trip together. That was so fun. Mm. And that's when I felt, oh, shit, this thing, a chance for me to actually go beyond into. Like feeling deeper stuff.
Yeah.
Peter Pan. That's what they call it growing up.
But it was that trip, and it was so fun, and it was like, I just, then everything started growing. And to be honest, every trip that we've done has still that intensity, that still that fun, still that most awesomest time. Oh man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that origination story. Yeah. What's the most meaningful thing that you've ever done in your life?
Probably having my first son at such a young age alone. Mm-hmm.
And pulling it off and coming through on the other end.
Still, you don't do it alone. It takes a village, right? So I had my parents. They helped me. They played the role of the father in the, in the raising of the child. But because looking back at being pregnant, being a mother at 19, I don't know some days where I got that strength. So I could study last minute and still pull off an A on a test, mm-hmm. And I was kind of like that in college too. It was just like, get to the end so I can work. Nursing school was the hardest thing I've ever done in my whole life. Not raising my kids, going to nursing school was the most challenging. You get one chance. Mm-hmm. So gotta pass or I don't become a nurse. To me, that's the most meaningful because I was able to pull it together as a single young mom.
So what are you looking forward to now that you're 50?
Well, I'm looking forward to retirement, but I'm not in the place, but I'm looking forward to being a grandma.
Mm-hmm.
We're not ready for that. You know what I mean? My kids are not ready for that, but I'm looking forward to that. I want to be called Tutu. I want the oldest sounding name to be what my grandchildren call me because I don't think I look that old.
You want a little kid to say Tutu to you in a room and people are going to be looking like, who the heck are you talking to? Yeah. Still got to do stuff that's meaningful and fun, so.
Well, that's why I'm starting the legacy building by, sewing and quilting and
scrapbooking.
Because I want to do stuff that I'm going to be able to leave behind. After I finish working as an oncology nurse, I want to be an aesthetics nurse. Like, I want to do that part-time. Yeah. Botox, fillers, lasers, things like that.
Yeah. Do you have a comfort food?
Yeah. It's Häagen-Dazs green tea ice cream.
Ooh, that's good.
He has to buy it for me in order to keep me happy.
How do you like your eggs, Carl?
It doesn't matter. I was just going to say, because I know his favorite eggs.
What's his favorite eggs?
It's... I make like a real quick Portuguese version of an omelet, but it's spam. So I chop up the spam and then I add a little onion and then it's like a scrambled, it's like a scramble.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how we like it. That's how we both like our eggs.
Oh, sweet. Spam and onions and scrambled up, huh?
Yeah.
You like sriracha on that?
No, we don't like
I know
hot
you
stuff.
Like sriracha from what I read.
Yeah.
But I use a sriracha ketchup as one of the things when I make my katsu sauce.
We don't like spicy stuff.
Oh, okay. Did you say you were part Korean?
Or
you are? Okay. All right.
I eat kimchi, but it has to be chased with like plenty of rice.
Okay.
A hot one, but I can't handle spicy stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. I like Filipino food.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you eat like the dinaguan and stuff?
It looks like your Wi-Fi
password
has changed.
Sorry, our Alexa is talking to us.
Oh, dinaguan, Alexa. Alexa, dinaguan. No.
Maybe that's why.
Well, little did we know, Alexa is Filipino.
I will eat it. But it depends who makes it because it cannot be too powdery. But I'm legit Filipino because I eat that. Yeah.
Oh, I'm understanding that. Definitely. I'm appreciating
the the Hawaiian stuff, I eat more Hawaiian, like raw stuff than Kaneala by far. I eat all the raw stuff.
All the raw, yeah. Liver? You eat like liver and onions?
I eat, well, not cooked. I actually eat ake, but I don't eat cooked liver. Oh, gross. I know.
I just don't like the
He doesn't like ake. He doesn't like opihi. More for me. I love opihi. I was raised to eat all that stuff. I didn't know what it was, right? Yeah. So by the time I found out what everything was, like tripe, it was too late. It was too late. I liked it already and I stuck with it, you know? But I'm thankful for my dad to force feed me all that kind of stuff, because I have a really like extensive palate. I'll eat anything.
When you have friends over, what are you drinking?
Oh, whatever they bring. We do a lot of vodka cran, vodka soda. We've been into the Trulies, you know, trying all the different flavor Trulies.
Sparkling seltzers, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, we do a lot of wine. I forgot about wine.
Do you have a health routine?
Nope, I don't do anything. Isn't that crazy?
So how can you be so skinny? You've been slim and fit looking as long as I've known you.
I think it's just genes. My dad is pretty fit looking. And I hardly eat. I really don't eat a lot. I never have. Everyone always tells me, like, you eat so slow. You eat so... Ever since I was little, when I eat, I eat a little bit and then I get full. Kaneala finishes the rest of my food.
Ooh, lucky Kaneala.
So no, I don't have a routine. I eat a lot of junk food. I really don't watch my diet. I should though, because it doesn't mean that I'm not going to get high cholesterol, or I call it the beatus. You know, my middle son works at McDonald's. So if he gets his free meals or discounts, we take advantage of it. Oh, so there is the, I call it my Peloton because it's a fake Peloton. I used it probably like 5 times. But I like to think I walk enough at work because I get like 10,000 steps at work every day. I'm also scared of like getting, call them old age spots, right? Or sunspots. Like,
we'll blame it on the sun. Call it sunspots, not age
spots. Sunspots. Everyone knows us for traveling. We travel a lot. Like, that's one of our things, you know? Mm-hmm. So he's taught me how to snowboard. I'm not good at all. I'm very dangerous. But, that's one of our destinations too. So if we're not going to snowboard, a pro football game, or a winery, it's really not, we don't do any more travel than that. Like, those are the three big things we do.
What's one specific lesson you learned? One or two?
To honestly live for today, because there may not be a tomorrow. It sounds very cliche, but when you have an illness and a chronic illness, the end might be one of two things. I'm cured or I'm going to die. So whatever the end is, the end outcome, you prepare for that outcome, no matter if it's good or bad. And every day matters. That's what I really take from it every single day. You gotta make the best of every single day that you have, whether you have 2 or 20 or 20 years from now, you know?
It's longer, but thank you so much for hanging out and talking story, Cara, for almost 4 hours.
Yeah. I don't know how you do this, because you end up talking that long with everybody at least.
Thanks so much, Dave.
You gotta come drink in my garage.
Oh, you know what, bro? I'm there. Okay, you guys take care. Great talking to you. Yeah, always good talking to you guys. Hello, brother.
Bye. The devil.
I hope you like this episode of Primetime 89. I'd like to thank our guest, Moana Whelan, for taking the time to talk story with us. I'd also like to thank everyone who helped put this together. Jamie Barboza and Nicole Barboza Yoshimitsu, Wendy Brown and Kaylee Aquaro, Drake and Dana Kao. And a special thank you to Drez, Dwayne Andres for the music, and Elizabeth Mattson with production and editing. I'm your host, David Mattson. Be sure to like us and follow us at Primetime 89 Hawaii, where you can see photos of our guests and their stories. And subscribe to get the latest updates and news of upcoming episodes. And join us again with another classmate on Primetime 89.